This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hi, I'm Lasaida Shelagu, founder of TheMainTab.com. And what I love about beauty is it empowers you to be you.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Hi, Lasaida. It's so great to see you.
Likewise. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us on the Beauty is Your Business podcast.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. So I'd love to hear a little bit. I mean, we haven't seen each other for such a long time. It's just great to see you again. So I'd love to take you back in time a little bit to your journey in beauty and where you started. And now you're an entrepreneur with a new business.
What a time to start a business, let me tell you.
It's very exciting, have to say. We're excited to be a part of it. So give us a little bit of background about how you began in the beauty industry and what you've done.
Sure. To start from the beginning of time, I've always been into beauty. Just as a young kid, I remember borrowing my sister's makeup and putting on purple eyeshadows and crushing and making nail polishes by myself. And it just sort of evolved. And I studied during college advertising and marketing with a very keen interest in joining the magazine space. I was just fascinated by magazines and how they portrayed fashion and beauty, and it just looked so fun and so glamorous. And so I was planning to go that direction, and then the Great Recession hit, and of course that industry was very much impacted. And I think, like most people in America, I was just looking for a job, any job in any industry, just to kind of have something to do that wasn't a backup or something that I was already doing, like part-time gigs. And I applied at this up-and-coming candle company called Nest Fragrances, and no one knew of them. And in my head, I'm thinking, they're crazy. Who are they going to sell these $32 candles to? Like, they're going to go bankrupt. Like, I can't even afford a Glade plug-in, let alone a luxury candle. What is this category? Why have I never heard of it?
And interesting. When was that? I mean, because Nest has been around for a long time now.
Yeah. So I graduated in 2010, and that was 2011 when I found them. And this was early internet days. I mean, I remember going on their website to do research before my interview, and it was just a landing page with a picture of a candle and a phone number and an address. And I was like, okay, is this company for real? Like, who are they? And for me, it was just sort of supposed to be a job to get some experience and get my foot in the door somewhere and build my resume up so that I could go and pursue what I thought I really wanted to do, which was the editorial in the magazine world. And
well, let me ask you, isn't that how a true entrepreneurial venture begins?
Yeah, you just
when you start. Well, no, if you look back in time and you look at Nest Fragrances, that's 10 years ago. And all they did was have one slide up there with one candle, and look at them today. They're a multi-million-dollar company that's global and is very, very successful and really changed the category. So it's interesting to, I'm an entrepreneur as well. So when you take a look back in time and the things that have happened and have evolved and have had success, it's always a good measure. Okay. Back to your story. I just had to bring
that. And to piggyback off of that too, I mean, the reason that Nest has become the powerhouse that it has is, well, A, the people that worked there were all incredible, and everyone was very capable and smart, and everyone had that entrepreneurial spirit if you worked there, because that's how leadership was. And to this day, I always say, I learned everything of what to do in the business world from Laura Slatkin. I mean, she is a force to be reckoned with, and she just relies on her intuition, and she just knows her product, she knows her customer, and she gets things done. And you, when you're around that, you absorb that and you kind of become like that. So imagine having, 20, 30 people working for you who are becoming like you every day. And then you're going to build a powerhouse brand because you're just sort of encouraging and empowering that same behavior and work ethic. I got hired there to be a sales coordinator, which I didn't even know what that was. But my job was to literally find independent boutique stores in the country and call them and pitch the brand to them and launch the brand there. And the other thing that was great about Laura and the company, she knew the power of small businesses. She knew that those guys are true brand builders. Yes, being at Neiman Marcus is fantastic. Being at Saks is incredible. You get the exposure, but you don't get, you have to pay for that, right? Whether it's, you know, discounts or vendor-sponsored employees or this or that. Whereas if you can get a boutique owner or buyer to fall in love with your product, do you know what's going to happen? Every single time a customer walks into their door, they're going to say, oh my God, you have to check out this collection. You have to check out this new product because they love it. And they're going to become your brand ambassadors and truly help scale the business. So that was my job, was to find these boutiques. And, you know, it's a lot easier now with social media and the internet being what it is. But back then, I would sit at my desk going through Allure magazine and Lucky magazine and those articles of like 50 best stores in Los Angeles, like top 10 mm-hmm. spots in Miami.
And you would call them? And that
and
was
I would
your...
call them, yeah. Uh-huh. And within 3 months, I remember I launched Blue Mercury. I had no idea mm-hmm. what Blue Mercury was. I thought it was one location in Washington, D.C. And mm-hmm. it turns out it was, and it was pretty massive. And this is when Blue Mercury had 12 locations, right? So it was still kind of up and coming. And then within 6 months, I was their top salesperson and I became manager of the department. And then in the 4 years I was there, we went from about 300 or so boutiques when I joined to about 2,200 by the time I left.
Wow. And let me ask you, so when you were on that path and looking for these boutiques, because it's a very interesting story, were you focused on specific areas in the country or like how, what was your strategy as you were moving into these? Because, you know, okay, looking at Lucky and Allure, those are the best of the best based on the editorial, which is great strategy. But how did you do a deeper dive on that? And how did you figure out where you wanted to be? Because that's a lot of distribution, right? And
yep.
it's a lot of hand-holding.
Yes. So again, this is where it comes in. I learned about business at Nest because Laura was just very smart and just truly understood how business works and how you're not going to have a Neiman Marcus like store that you have in Fifth Avenue in a state like, let's say, I don't know, Arkansas. So you have to know what luxury means in different parts of the country and you have to be able to figure that out. So for us, it was, we didn't do anything where you were focused on different states. I think that is actually a huge issue with sales in general because it pigeonholes you into a certain category. And particularly at the time, I had a team, our sales team was about 4 people. And initially they had separated it into someone had the West Coast, someone had the Northeast, someone had the Southwest. And not everyone works the same. Not everyone is as eager to succeed or to grow the brand. Some people are very comfortable pitching 2 stores a week. And then you have, you know, me who's pitching 50 stores a week. So it became very frustrating if I didn't have, you know, the Texas state, but I would find all these stores that we should be in Texas that the person who had that state wasn't really pursuing because they were just comfortable.
So managing. How did you tackle that? So that's an interesting question because
we opened up the country. We let everyone have full freedom in whomever they pitched as long as it made sense for the brand and as long as there were no conflicts with stores nearby. So, and this is when you get into those pain points and it kind of goes into how I designed the main tab because I went through all of these challenges and as a brand, I knew what I wanted. So for example, conflict situations tend to be very common when you're building a luxury brand because today you'll open, you know, the Purple Poppy in Connecticut and then 6 months from now, the Red Poppy, who's 3 miles away, also wants to carry your brand. And then they get very territorial. So how do you
manage
that?
Let me just ask you a question. So when you say that, do you mean when you're in a local community, there are stores that are interested and then another similar store will be, mm-hmm. and then it's competitive. So
for the stores,
everybody
to get the
is
brand.
Buying, right. And it well, to get the brand, but then to get the customer. So
yep.
It's a twofold question, right? So how does the brand as the brand manage that in a community, right? If multiple stores want them, and then how does the customer, you know, how does that play out? Because now everything's social, right? So it's very, it's very territorial, and it does create a level of competition, so to speak, I would think.
It does. And that's when you, it doesn't happen as often as you would think it happens. And this is the reason. So on the main tab, for example, if you're a brand and a retailer wants to carry your product, they send you a connection request, which is similar to a friend request.
Bring us up to date as to where you are today and what the main tab is and, you know, your entrepreneurial journey since you left your corporate job.
So what I saw while growing these boutique businesses for a few various brands that I worked for, and they all wanted to expand their independent retail distribution. And I saw at every company I went to work for that they didn't know how or didn't realize how much work it was. And it was just so much easier for, you know, emerging and up and coming brands to just get the PO from Neiman Marcus and sort of feel like it's fine. I don't need to go pursue retailers. It's too much work. And then on the retailer side, they were exhausted because imagine you have 50 or 100 brands in your store and each of those brands has different order forms, different catalogs, different sales reps, turnover. Your sales rep tomorrow is different from the one you had today. So it became very frustrating for them in addition to doing the trade shows, which are very expensive, as you know, right, for both brands and for retailers to either exhibit or to attend and, you know, the opportunity and time cost of being there for weeks at a time. So I just kept seeing that with each, and I was doing a ton of trade shows, right? I mean, at one point I was dubbed the queen of trade shows. I was doing 8 a month, I think, was my peak.
Was this for Nest or?
Yes.
So when you were working in the, okay, for the company.
And then for other companies as well too. And I saw with each trade show I was doing that attendance was lower and lower. And the customers who carried our brand didn't really come to visit us as much because they already knew our brand and they were loyal to our brands and they would just email us and place orders online or call us or text or whatever they preferred. So I saw that kind of shift happen many years ago and I just kept thinking, why isn't there a Net-a-Porter for wholesale? Well, and the few B2B websites that did exist were kind of, if you think of B2B 5 years ago, it's like a blue landing page with like a guy with the headset says, call me now to get your quote kind of placement. And in addition to that, they were very expensive. I remember one of them quoted us at another company I worked for, which was significantly smaller. And I think we had 10 SKUs in total. And they said, oh yeah, so to work with us, it's $20,000 sign up fee and then $170 a month per user. And it would just bankrupt or really eliminate the opportunity for a smaller company to even participate. So I just kept thinking there needs to be, you know, a premium high-end wholesale marketplace that would give retailers the power to connect with their existing brands or discover new brands and place wholesale orders from the comfort of anywhere. And we wouldn't be predatory towards brands. We would just make money when they made money. So if you sell product, we make a commission and it would be in line with what you would pay your average sales rep, if not less actually, because we offer a value-based commission structure, which means the more you sell through our platform, the lower your commission becomes. And that's kind of how I just kept thinking this needed to exist and then decided to start building it. And the first website I built, I did it myself on Wix.com just because I'd heard you need to prove that there's a market for this because everyone I told about this didn't get it. And when I would tell people, do you realize that independent retailers in America do $800 billion a year in revenue? No one believed it. They could not wrap their head around that number, right?
Cumulatively.
Correct. Okay. All of them. There's approximately 100,000 or so independent businesses in the U.S. and 50,000 or so are independent retailers in the apparel, gift, lifestyle categories. And our target market is about 20,000 of them, which are the more premium high-end retailers, which tend to be more loyal to brands. And they don't look for, I call it shelf fillers or tchotchkes to just kind of round out their display. They look for brands that they can kind of keep reordering and commit to. And that's what customers do as well, right? We're all loyal to brands as consumers. If you know, it's very hard for us to switch the paper towel brand we're going to use or the laundry detergent. So we are also committed to brands. And that's how it started. And then I started building it while still working full time to help build other brands. And I decided to do it full time this year. We got accepted into an accelerator program last year in December, and they gave us some capital to sort of redo things. So I made the website a bit better, got some engineers. We improved the backend tremendously, and we really took off in January of this year, I would say. And then we were forced to close about 6 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And then we just were completely on pause up until late August, mm-hmm. and decided to reactivate our efforts in September, just because Q4 tends to be a more powerful season for the gift industry and lifestyle space.
Wow, that's such an exciting journey. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Lasada to dig in deeper into the main tab and where it's headed and how it's doing and supporting the future of retail.
Every business has at least one big pivotal moment. The moment when you say, okay, we're at this turning point, so then what? I'm Lahari Neal Peretti, founder of LN Accounting Advisor. I hope you'll join me each week on my podcast, Then What, as we talk with successful business leaders who push past their business's biggest then what moments and succeed in an even bigger way because of effective leadership and solid business practices. It's inspiring and deeply useful information for any entrepreneur. Subscribe to Then What on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find the best podcasts.
I'd love to dig in a little bit deeper into actually where you're at as a business today. You really took a leap in the middle of COVID to launch this business, which is really a fantastic opportunity because so many things are happening in the retail sector. So I'd love for you to share a little bit more about where you're at, how it's evolving, what type of traction you're getting. Tell us everything.
Totally. Okay. I'll pour my heart out. So we're still very small. It's bootstrap startup, and it's me doing everything from things like this to onboarding brands to talking to retailers. And I always say that when I set out to build this, I didn't want to, you know, use all of the buzzwords you hear in the tech space of like disrupt and this and democratize or whatnot. And I always set out to build a tech-enabled business with a human heart and a human touch, right? So I can't tell you how many
times.
Or retailers will text me and I'll respond, and they have my cell phone number. And that's because I truly love what I do, and it's never work for me. But at the same time, we are running a business, right? So we need to scale and grow. And to date, we have, I would say, approximately 80 brands or so across the lifestyle, gift, and beauty categories. And as of yesterday, I think we're at about 600 high-end independent retailers across the country. So COVID has hurt independent retail businesses in a very significant way, but it has also shown how powerful, nimble they can be and how quickly they can pivot. So when department stores and everyone had to close, independent retailers were like, no problem. We will do curbside pickup. You want to order via text and have me deliver it to you? Not an issue. I will get it to you. So we really saw how powerful they can be and how quickly they can change gears and keep going, right?
I think that really speaks to the human touch too. I mean, if you want to just, you know, talk about that, how with what has happened in our country, that all of these stores have really kept communities going, feeding us, you know, supplying need. I mean, it's really pretty remarkable. They're almost, that's such a strong platform for you, I think, because it would be incredible actually. And I'm always thinking about the content piece. I can't help it, but it would be incredible if you could capture some of those stories from the people you work with.
Yeah. I have plenty with what I hear. I actually spoke with a retailer now, I can't remember their name, but a customer was in their store shopping and they needed a size small in something, and the retailer only had a large, And the customer said, don't worry, I'll take it and I'll fix it. Because that's how much people are rallying behind supporting these independent local businesses. And what we're doing is, so my mission, you know, I didn't want to create a premium wholesale website because, you know, I want to be bougie or pretentious about it. I really wanted to bring a very curated assortment to these retailers to make their job easier and to simplify their process. So that's, you know, it would be so much easier and more lucrative for me to really open up the floodgates and let in anyone and sell all the products. And then, you know, you're just an Etsy or you're just an Alibaba. And then you're basically just fighting for clicks and for checkouts versus fighting for brand building and doing things in a more slow and sustainable and scalable way fundamentally. Right. So that's something I always keep in mind and have to keep repeating.
That's very smart. I love that because you're really curating and you're making it unique and people will come to you as an expert.
Right. And the brands we have so far, I mean, I can't even tell you how incredible they are. Everyone from Acton Acre, which is just the most beautiful, clean skincare, hair care brand, right? They're one of the first ones to create a cold processed hair care regimen that any store that sees their packaging and their product, they love it and they want it. And then you have companies like Maud, which is creating modern sexual wellness products. Sparty Sense, which is you guys, right? I mean, how cool is that? We're actually going to include the brand in an email campaign next week for stocking stuffers.
That's exciting. I love it. How cool.
Like, imagine receiving those in your stocking for Christmas. It's just the cutest little gift, and it can really appeal to anyone. Everyone should have one in their bag, right? And then we have more premium skincare and beauty brands like Alexandra Wagner Skincare, who is the esthetician to Gwyneth Paltrow. So I trust anything she creates. And then we have...
She's beautiful.
Angela Caglia Skincare, which is sold in the most prestigious retailers around the globe, from Space NK to Harvey Nichols to Harrods, Neiman Marcus. So, I always say she's the godmother of the rose quartz movement because she was one of the first ones to
create
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we have more accessible and, you know, affordable brands that fall in that premium category. Like, we just launched Nors Beauty, which is EWG certified, and they're the first ones to create a skincare brand with, you know, average MSRP of around $20, super accessible, that helps women with their skin during their menstrual cycle because it varies month to month. So these are all the things I look into when bringing brands on board across all categories, not just beauty, whether it's home decor, fragrances, candles, or whatnot. Like, I look into seeing why these brands will be here tomorrow and what they look like a year from now. And that's how it's helped us sort of eliminate noise, because it's amazing that it's easier than ever to start a brand and start a product. But it also creates all of this noise because everyone can make candles in their kitchen counter and then they can stop tomorrow because they got bored. And then,
well, that kind of. That's an interesting segue into the innovation conversation, because you're right. It is so noisy and there are so many products, and it is not easy to bring a product to market. I mean, I know that very well. And, you know, no matter who you are, no matter what you do, it is hard work, and it is a lot of R&D, and it's a lot of troubleshooting, and it's a lot of it's many challenges over and over again. So I'd love to hear from you in terms of what you're seeing that is unique and innovative. You know, that's the thing right now. I mean, we do this beauty podcast. We have amazing guests, amazing companies, but there's so much stuff and everyone's so passionate about what they're doing. But how do you make it? How do you become, you know, the one thing that everybody's talking about, that everyone wants to have? And what are the innovations that are really... that you're seeing on this smaller scale that you think are going to just blow up?
So there's lots of things, to your point, that go into it when creating a brand or a product. And you often just don't know what will resonate with customers. And what I always think first and foremost is, who is your customer? Because there's a lot of companies who want to go D2C, and there's companies who want to do D2C and B2B. And you have to meet in the middle. So it's, you know, I hate saying it sometimes, but packaging is still king. You see packaging, it immediately attracts your eye and it resonates with someone, and that's who your customer is, and that's who you should keep designing for. Creating packaging, I've seen this happen time and again when very much D2C focused brands create packaging that really works on the screen and online and on social media, but falls completely flat on a shelf in any store. And that can destroy a brand very quickly, because no matter how fantastic you are with D2C and how many millions of customers you have on your e-commerce website and social media channels or whatnot, you're not selling at a store level, you're missing a huge amount of customers. I mean, it's definitely changed now because of COVID and people have turned to e-commerce. But up until COVID, I think 80% or so of sales were still being done at brick and mortar locations. And e-commerce was, I think, less than 20 at some point. So
it's really important. Well, that's a very interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. You're absolutely right, because there are different, when you create something for the D2C market, it is a different sort of thought process. And you may have to pivot if you go into the retail space. In the larger scalable, because it may not, you're right, it may not resonate. But one of the things that I find very interesting today, you know, and I think back on different businesses and brands, it used to be define your audience, say who you're going after. But today, and something that we're seeing with Sparty, it's kind of being defined for us. And it's going where it's led. And it's a very exciting process to see. It's a little, it's very compelling, because you're seeing people find and experience something and really rally around it. So how do you see that happening at the retail level? Because it's a different, you know, everybody always wanted you to be so focused. We're 21 to 45 or whatever the number is, whatever the demo is. I personally don't believe that that's going to get you where you need to go. I think you have to be a little open-minded today.
Agreed.
Do you?
And absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of companies missed the mark, because they were so set in their ways of doing business, the old traditional way of like, we're targeting moms in middle America between the age of 30 and 38, and they make this much a year and they go to these stores or whatnot. And what happened is social media completely turned that on its head, because it used to be that you as a brand could compete if you could afford advertising on the pages of Glamour and Vogue and the local newspapers. And now anyone can compete with just a phone on their hand, right? So
it's pretty remarkable, right? If you think about it.
It's incredible. And the thing we always knew and was always the case is the customer is smart and the customer knows what they want. The customer many years ago didn't always know what was out there for them, because the only things they saw were the big brands who could afford to get their attention. Now the customer is doing research. Now the customer is demanding transparency. Now the customer owns the brands. The customer tells the brand who you're going to be and why you're going to be powerful or successful or whatnot. The brand no longer dictates things. And I see it sometimes often, and I have to push back a bit with some of the brands we bring on our platform who tend to think that things are still done that way, when, you know, they'll think like, oh no, I don't want to sell to that retailer because I don't want to go into that market. And again, I'm going to just say like Arkansas or Kansas or Kentucky or anything that's not New York or Beverly Hills or Texas. And I have to sit them down and be like, no, there is a customer there that wants your brand and can afford your price point. Just because you don't know that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And these retailers, they know their customers. If they want to purchase your, you know, $1,200 face mask or whatever you're selling, that's because they know they have a customer who will purchase it. So you don't get to dictate anymore where your brand is or who your brand is. The market dictates it, right? So you kind of either get on board with that or you're going to be left behind. Like, we've seen a ton of massive companies that we never thought would get left behind kind of fall behind, right? And it's just the nature of things. And then you see small, you know, emerging brands come up and gain all the market share. And then you're like, what happened? How did we miss this? How did this small company started by this person, you know, take over our entire market in 5 years or whatever the timeline is? So I think that's going to be an interesting shift. And, you know, I think in terms of established and emerging brands, one of the things that I have seen over the last 10 years is, besides the customer is very smart and they know things, the only way to build a brand successfully is to be super focused on quality and be consistent. And that's how you're going to build a brand and a loyal following. And it's one of the reasons why we don't let a lot of brands into our platform. It's because you know, we meet them and, you know, they might have a wonderful product right now, but we're like, where are you going in a year from now or 5 years from now? And if you're making candles in your kitchen right now, do you plan to expand that in a year's time? And one of the challenges with small businesses or small business brands is they can cut corners sometimes because they need to, right? So if your candle usually has 12% fragrance oil load in it, they will cut it to 8% to save some money if they need to do it. And that is really damaging and detrimental. And it ends up hurting us because our customers are trusting us to find these brands, to source these brands, and to do our research on these brands. So if a brand were to do something like that, it makes it look like we're not doing our job. So that's why we're super, super cautious about who we let in and who we work with, and, you know, focus very much on bringing something of great quality to our retailer so they don't have to question us or worry about it.
That's such a great strategy, Liseda, and congratulations on all of your hard work. We'll be right back with Liseda to hear her final thoughts on beauty and where she's headed.
I'd like you to join me in supporting an extraordinary mission to make arts education real for underserved kids nationwide and help keep the creative connection alive. Look, arts are not a luxury. From the time that kids develop motor skills, they rely on the arts to learn how to communicate. Arts are a great collaborative experience, and they teach us how to critically think and empathize and understand the human condition. So Mouth Media is proud to partner with AHA Broadway and support their efforts to help bring these vital services back to schools. With every dollar AHA Broadway raises, they will directly serve the kids of New York and beyond. Please visit ahabroadway.org/1000kids. Again, that's ahabroadway.org/1000kids. And please contribute anything you can to their crowdfunding effort.
And now it's Hitting the Pan.
So we're back with Liseda from the Main Tab, and we're going to talk to her a little bit about her personal life. So, listen, we've all been in the queue. It's been rather challenging, right? Sometimes I say I'm the Wizard of Oz. I'm like sitting behind my computer all day entertaining the world. It's kind of funny.
Someone's got to do it.
I don't know. Someone's got to do it. So if you could dream and be anywhere right now, where would you go? What would make you feel good? And how would you celebrate just life in a way that would be meaningful for you?
Are we talking about traveling?
Yeah, I'm talking about traveling. Where do you want to go? Let's go. I got to get out of here.
Take me anywhere.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Where do you want to go? Give me paint a really romantic picture, somewhere fabulous and special.
I know.
Or where have you been? Do you like to travel? Where are you from? Because I know you have an accent.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I am originally from Albania, which is like a tiny little country off the coast of Italy and in between Turkey and Greece and all those fun places. Mm. And I moved here when I was 11. So pretty much grew up here now and consider myself a New Yorker, which is great. But where would I go? I honestly forgot what it's like to travel, which is so sad. I could totally use a little beach vacation. I would not be mad at a week in somewhere like Turks and Caicos, or if we're really getting crazy, like Bora Bora Tahiti.
Get the plane.
Something really nice, casual, really casual.
Okay.
Nothing casual. Crazy. But yeah, that's where I would take myself very quickly.
And what would you pack? What would be in your bag?
Sparty sense.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. How did I know you were going to say that? That seems to be the hot thing in the moment in people's bags.
Totally Sparty sense. And Acton Acre. What else would I pack? Oh, definitely a Bodewell candle. Oh, all of her candles. I love Bodewell. It's one of the home fragrance brands on our platform, and it's founded by Effie, and she she's an artist. She created this entire collection based on travels. And ooh, yeah. And the Marrakesh fragrance is my favorite. It's like
so dark
and sexy. So I would definitely have one of those.
Where do I get that? I want that. That's my favorite too. Smoky, dark. Yeah. I love that.
I can hook you up.
Okay. Hook me up. That would be great.
You can
love
find
it.
Her at little boutiques. She's like a boutique darling brand. Everyone loves it.
I love that.
What else would I pack? Definitely.
What are you going to wear?
Oh God, I want to go shopping so bad.
There's nothing to buy. I went yesterday. It was terrible. I was so depressed.
I haven't shopped in so long, but definitely a lot of bathing suits and probably some caftans to cover up the 19 pounds I've gained in the last 6 months. So
you gotta throw some jewelry on.
Caftans, yeah.
There's a great girl in LA. I'll send you. I can't think of her name. What about jewelry? You're gonna have sexy gold jewelry, bangles, you know, paint, you know, what are you gonna wear?
God, I feel like I should be going to Marrakesh now.
That's on my list.
Yeah. Jewelry. Let's see. I'm a big fan of dainty pieces for every day, but then I also really like big statement pieces for nighttime. So I would very much like a trunk full of jewelry, and I will make sure that my boyfriend gets a copy of this podcast.
That sounds perfect. Well, it was so fantastic having you on the show and hearing about your journey and going back in time with you. And we wish you so much success. We're so excited to be part of the Main Tab. We think you're onto something really big and very special and love your mission. Can you share with our audience how they can reach you and find your business?
Oh, totally.
And get in touch?
Yeah, you could email me info@themaintab.com. I would say my name to Laceda@themaintab.com, but no one can spell it. So it's much easier to say info at. And then our Instagram and social media is also at themaintab.com. And the reason we're called The Main Tab is when I started this, the mission was to bring all wholesale and small business needs in one main digital tab/platform. So
love that. And if you could just leave us with one final thought, that would be great.
Oh, yes. Support your local independent retailers. They need you. They love you. And they're there for you. And no one knows you better than they do. And it's, you know, go shop there. It's fun. And they have really great products usually, especially if you're using the Main Tab to find them.
I love it. That's fantastic. Laceda, thank you so much for joining us. This
thank
is Abby
you.
Wallach signing off for Beauty is Your Business.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2020. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network and find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.